You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Roadkill. It is unpleasant for many reasons, from the unsavory sight to the loss of life. But it can also provide important information on the health of some of California's animal populations. From deer to mountain lions, the number of wild animals killed on California roadways can shed light on hot spots around the state that may be more dangerous for animals to cross, as well as what needs to be done to protect them. The problem is, while researchers say the information on where animals are being hit and the number of animals found killed is critical, there's really no formal way to track them all because much of the data collected is volunteer-based. Cap Radio's environment reporter, Manola Sakaida, spoke to researchers at UC Davis about what they've learned from roadkill and what the state is doing to better track and conserve native species. Good morning, Manola.
Good morning.
Okay, so on the topic of roadkill, what got you interested or even aware that there's research in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone sees roadkill, but it was interesting to me when I got this email about this roadkill report out of UC Davis's Road Ecology Center that was just really analyzing what that means. And that really was something I hadn't heard too much about before. You know, I've heard of measures to try to make it safer for animals around roadways, but not this kind of analysis. So honestly, it was kind of like morbid curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, and given that UC Davis has been tracking roadkill, kind of formally collecting data, how long has this been going on?
Right. So I guess for some zoomed out context, it was just interesting talking to a researcher at UC Davis, Fraser Schilling, who kind of leads that report, about when this started becoming a thing. And roadkill has been a thing since cars were invented, it seems like. Not really surprised there. One thing that Schilling, the researcher I talked to, told me was that there were some really early observations of roadkill that came out of California from this biologist, Joseph Grinnell, in the 20s. So, you know, really long time ago. And at the time, there wasn't really an approach to managing that in some way. It was just mostly observations that, hey, this is something that's really happening. And then maybe more recently in the last couple decades, there have been more efforts to not just, you know, notice how we can try to address this problem, but see how roadkill can be a way of analyzing it as well. So the report that I was looking at, it's the 8th annual report from the Road Ecology Center, which is part of UC Davis, that analyzes roadkill from collections of data on it throughout the state. And the main thing that researchers discuss in the report are the declines or increases in the amount of roadkill for particular animals. So in this report, it said that there was a decline in roadkilled mule deer and coyotes, and then there was an increase in roadkilled mountain lions, as an example.
Mm. Okay, so this first started kind of being looked into more than a century ago in the 1920s, and now UC Davis is on its 8th report looking at this. What are they learning from roadkill on California's roadways?
Right. So one of the first points that Schilling made to me when we talked about this was that there really isn't a widespread understanding of just how impactful humans are when it comes to animals and possible population decline, specifically because of roads and cars. So in this report, it's noted that California doesn't keep population counts of most wildlife in the state, but tracking roadkill is a good way of maybe monitoring them, or at least giving a part of that picture. Mm-hmm. And from researchers are seeing, for some species, the rate of mortality is high enough to be concerning about how sustainable it is, that in the ways that we are, you know, accidentally killing them with cars. But zooming back out a little bit, roadkill can tell us a lot about the health of animal populations in California. And Schilling gave me his own explanation on how that works.
There has been recent research suggesting that if you keep traffic constant, the amount of roadkill is proportional to the size of the wildlife population. But there's two things going on there at the same time. Number one, the amount of roadkill is potentially indicating the size of the population. But if you have a lot of roadkill, you're also potentially decreasing the size of that population. So being able to understand that, one is an ecological measurement, and the other is a measurement of our impact, human impact on wildlife populations. So we want to be able to understand both at the same time. And that initial measurement of where are the roadkill occurring, what species, when, and so on, is key to answering those questions.
So like you said, there's that first part about what does this tell us about the health of animal populations in the state? And then there's that other part, which is looking at the fact that humans driving cars are one of the biggest threats to some animal populations in the state. And there's ways to mitigate that, which Schilling talked about in the report when it comes to transportation infrastructure, adding more protective measures. And yeah, that was just the two big pillars of this report.
You know, and when you look at what the research shows, you make a point in your reporting to separate two of those key points about roadkill. So let's start with one of them. What does the amount of roadkill potentially indicate?
And that was a really interesting thing for me, too. Schilling told me that, for example, a decline in roadkill of an animal does not always necessarily mean a good thing. So he told me that, as an example, the decline in mule deer is something that might be occurring because of a declining population of the deer as a whole.
In the case of deer, we're seeing a decline in roadkill of deer. And so what that means to us is that because deer are moving around eating and they're generally staying inside home ranges, or in the case of a few herds, they migrate, the number that are killed is proportional to the number of deer that are total, unless you change how much traffic there is. Traffic has flattened during the pandemic, so it's not going up the way it was before. It went down and then it came back up a little bit. So traffic's not really changing. So if you see a change in the number of roadkill deer, it means there's a change in the population. And we're seeing a 10% per year decline in the number of roadkill deer. And the most likely explanation is that it's because there's a decline in the population.
So you can see by the way he describes that, that we can conclude that the decline is a negative thing because of everything else we know about how mule deer operate. But then, you know, aside from the deer, there's the fact that road-killed mountain lions are on the rise. And that means a different thing entirely. And it's actually kind of linked to that. Schilling told me that some of the researchers that he's talked to have guessed that it might be because of the way that mountain lion depend on these deer.
If we've got a decline in the deer and mountain lion prey on deer, that means there's fewer deer for them to find, so they have to move around more to find those. And a lion moving around more means it's going to cross more roads and they're going to get hit more often. So deer road kills going down indicates a decline in the mule deer population. The number of mountain lion road kills going up indicates that sort of desperate search for food because there's fewer deer to find.
So to answer your original question, it seems like it kind of depends, you know, an increase or a decline in road killing of a certain species can mean different things depending on what we know about how they operate and how they're connected to other species. And these are just two prominent examples in this report on how that can manifest.
Yeah, there's a balance at play and we're all interconnected, you know, from humans to wild and native species. And that's what he was illustrating. When it comes to California, it's a very big state. Does UC Davis have a better understanding if there's hot spots in California or even in the Sacramento area?
Yes, there are hot spots that were highlighted in the report in California. And it's really important to know what those are so we can identify solutions based on those places, is what he told me. Schilling told me that most roadkill happens kind of around here. So it's the Bay Area through Sacramento into the foothills and the Tahoe area. And the reason for that is, you know, makes sense once you think about it, which is we have these big wildlife areas, some protected areas that are right next to super big urban areas. So it's basically where, you know, the forest meets really busy roadways. And that can be a recipe for, unfortunately, roadkill.
Yeah, like a wildland urban interface area or like a WUI zone, as they're known.
Exactly.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with CAP Radio environment reporter Manola Sakaida about what roadkill can tell us about the health of California's animal populations. So you also did reporting on more extensive reporting on California's mountain lion populations. What did you learn?
Yeah, it was interesting because the roadkill story was kind of linked to that one. You know, as we already mentioned, the roadkill report can tell us that mountain lions are being impacted by roadways. And when they're forced to roam and cross roadways, that can lead to their death. But if they stay where they are and don't move around as they naturally would, that can lead to something else that's also pretty bad, which is inbreeding, and something that researchers have seen in mountain lion populations in Southern California. And the short of that is that inbreeding causes all sorts of issues for animals, especially when it comes to reproducing. So it's something researchers are worried about when it comes to mountain lion health. And it's an impact that's directly tied to human activity, the way that we build roads. Basically, what's happening is that these mountain lions are getting boxed in by roadways. They can't cross them, so they stay where they are, and that is how inbreeding happens. Schilling told me that one thing that's difficult about monitoring their health is that we don't have an accurate population estimate, or we didn't, of mountain lions in California, which makes it hard to understand, you know, if we're seeing a big decrease or increase in their populations. But last week, I spoke with carnivore biologist Justin Dillinger, and he is part of the team and led the team that came up with this new estimate. And that estimate for the population of mountain lions in California is about 4,500. So the range was 3,900 to 5,300, with 4,500 being squarely in the middle.
Okay, that's interesting, because that seems kind of recent. Why haven't we had an idea of their population numbers before?
There's a lot of reasons for that. We don't have population counts for a lot of species in California, which can be make things difficult, especially when it comes to keeping them safe or just knowing how they're doing. For mountain lions in particular, you know, there's so much interest in them. So I think that's partially why some researchers were also kind of wanting this information so that they could even just talk to the people that are asking them these questions. The last estimate was made in the 80s, so you know, if you Google what the estimate is, you'll find one. And that is based off of this really rough estimate that was made in the 80s. Dillinger, the carnivore biologist I talked to, kind of described it as a back of the napkin approach. It was based off of a lot of assumptions. And, you know, that's not always completely the fault of the researchers at the time. Dillinger told me that he had to use a whole bunch of tactics to find this number that weren't always available. So for example, he was able to genetically analyze mountain lion scat that he collected across their home ranges. And then they've also been able to put tracking collars on some of them, which is also kind of a newer development. And then what makes this even more complicated is that mountain lion ranges are huge. They don't just stick to one area, which is what Dillinger described that to me.
The thing that people just have a hard time comprehending is the spatial scale that they live life at. You know, for some of us, it might be our 10 to 20 square block area that involves our house, the gas station, the grocery store, and friends and stuff. And that's a small area, but mountain lions, it is just orders of magnitude bigger than what people, the scale at which people live their life at.
And then the other tricky part is that you can't just do this once. If you want this number to really mean something, you have to track it over time, and that way you can draw out some conclusions.
You can't just do this once and say we're all good. Ideally, this serves as a baseline and say every 5 to 10 years, you update it so that you can look at things like the trend in the population. Is it stable? Is it increasing, decreasing? This was a huge effort, but in my opinion, it's the first step in really beginning to understand lions across the state.
And all of that just takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a game changer for people who are vested in monitoring mountain lion populations.
Yeah, definitely. And it's important not just so that we understand, you know, population number, but it also helps us, you know, do something about it. So do something about where we take action for mountain lions. One thing, you know, researchers like Justin were concerned about was the density estimates. So, you know, how many mountain lions are in a certain area for mountain lions in Southern California, you know, who are being impacted by inbreeding versus Northern California. So even though we don't have a lot of numbers to compare this first one to just yet, he actually told me that it's already been somewhat helpful because he was comparing the Northern California numbers to Southern and actually saw that they were pretty similar. So that concern that maybe it's gotten to the point of, you know, huge decline, it seems like we haven't gotten there just yet.
We do have just a little bit of time. Now, that doesn't mean we put it on the back burner and don't get back around to it until a few years. We still need to actively be working to restore connectivity in Southern California right now. But the densities and survival rates and things like that are showing us that the lions they do have some time.
And I asked him about, you know, is there an ideal number? And he kind of told me that's not really the greatest way to look at it. So this number is a good thing. It can tell us a little bit that at least we're not seeing dwindling numbers in Southern California. But at the same time, a number doesn't tell us what the health of a population is like, you know, how they're thriving and surviving. So there is other information we need, but at the very least, it can tell us numerically that we're doing okay.
Yeah, it's like a snapshot in time, but you don't know if that snapshot's going to change if there's inbreeding and they can't have, you know, baby mountain lions. That's
going to affect,
you know, future generations of mountain lions in the state. When it comes to prevention, what can be done to prevent roadkill from just happening in the first place?
So there's a few pieces to this. Schilling, the researcher with the Road Ecology Center, told me that there is a lot that can happen right now. The first things that came to his mind was trying to add some structures to roadways that already exist. So, for example, I know that wildlife bridges are something that people talk about, so ways that animals can cross safely. And then there's also, he said, something as simple as fencing along roadways. So preventing animals from crossing in areas that are the most dangerous would be really helpful. And he told me that last year, or in the last year, the legislature approved about $1 billion of funds to plan for wildlife crossings and fencing throughout the state. So that's really important. But another just as important thing is it needs to be done thoughtfully. And that's kind of where some of the issues arise, that sometimes the places where maybe transportation officials want to put a bridge or a fencing because it's, you know, maybe a convenient spot is maybe not the most effective for the animals. You know, we need to be placing them in spots where animals are actually impacted or actually are trying to cross the road. So there's that tricky balance there. And that's kind of part of the ongoing issue with addressing this. And then I know that on an individual level, I know at least that I kind of wondered, is there anything I can do about this? And from the report that I was looking at, it seems like the general advice is, you know, if you're driving through a wildlife area, drive a little bit more slowly, be cautious, be aware of those signs, you know, those deer crossing signs you'll see sometimes. Driving at night can be a bit more dangerous for the, you know, for this happening. And then there was the recommendation that, you know, try to drive less overall. But the part about that is that, you know, a lot of people aren't trying to drive through wildlife areas at night. It's not always a decision that you can really, you know, stay away from. So I do think that from what researchers told me, a lot of the big solutions are going to have to come from the state and building that infrastructure.
Given that California is so big and you have, yes, you have the state transportation officials, but then local jurisdictions, is it realistic to even have an accurate number of how many roadkill incidents there are in the state?
I don't know if we can say this is, you know, the perfect number or the perfect number of reports, but there is actually a way that people can get involved with helping. Schilling told me that in 2009, researchers launched this tool called the California Roadkill Observation System. So CROSS, which is, you know, kind of funny. You can find that on Google by either searching that name, California Roadkill Observation System, or even just Googling California Roadkill. I don't know if that's because my Google is skewed after doing this story, but I was able to find it just by Googling that. And there's a website where you can upload photos that you take of roadkill just on your phone. And, you know, it asks you a few questions that you can skip if you don't know, like, for example, what kind of animal is this? And those are just little ways in which researchers like Schilling collect this data. And he told me that volunteers are actually hugely impactful for this research. He told me about one volunteer in particular who did this for years and made a really big positive dent in the research by adding all this information. But of course, the flip side of that is that this is a volunteer system. A lot of people that are putting in information are people like you and me, but also a lot of researchers. But it's not paid in any way, and there's no mechanism to kind of fund it. So one thing that Schilling told me he'd really like to see is funding for a system like this one, not just to keep it running and keep people putting data in a more consistent level, because, you know, consistency is really important, but also a guarantee that having this data means we're going to do something about it. So anyways, again, there is a way that people can participate, but I think Schilling really wants it to be a little bit more consistent.
In the last 30 seconds that we have, I mean, Manola, you did a deep dive into this and you did more than one report on this. What's your big takeaway?
It's kind of a bummer takeaway, but the big one is that we really underestimate just how big of an impact us driving in cars has on wildlife. It has a huge impact. And for some animals, it's one of the, you know, one of the worst things that can happen to their population. But with that information, I really hope that, you know, for myself and others, we can see that we can recognize the impact and then also just try to see how we can advocate for solutions and be part of just kind of thinking about it and being aware of it and, you know, yeah, recognizing the part that we play.
Manola, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Manola Sakaira is Cap Radio's environment reporter, sharing her reporting on UC Davis conducting research into roadkill across the state to better understand animal populations across California with a goal to conserve native species. You're listening to and learning on Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.